You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Guillaume from AZ. Guillaume is an outstanding statistician, and he has been on the show before, and today we are talking about building an R community and his learnings. And if you think like, well, this is a pretty long episode and I'm not really interested in R, stay tuned. You will learn a lot about leading change, becoming a leader, investing in these kind of different things, and what kind of an outstanding story this is. So it is really highly motivating. So please listen to this, even if you think this is not applicable to you. I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy this episode. If you think, well, I could never do this and what Guillaume today talks about, really creating a community, driving change, being a change agent, being a leader, even if you don't have a big title of a VP or a senior director or all these kind of other things, you can be a big change agent. And if you're really interested in becoming like this, then talk to me. Reach out to me on LinkedIn and we can talk about what we can do together to drive this change. This is for you if you work in a company, or if you're a freelancer, or if you work at a CRO, or if you have your own company. Actually, if you have your own company, your own little consulting company, this will be especially helpful for you. So reach out to me if you really want to become a change agent, like Guillaume talks about in this episode. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org. Learn more about PSI activities, become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today I'm talking with Guillaume. And although he's probably well known for all his activities around biomarker, given that he also co-leads the biomarker special interest group, he's actually also very well known, at least with his company, AZ, about R. And so today we will talk about this specific thing. Hi, Guillaume, how are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm doing really good. It's so good to be back. Thanks for having me again. I'm very happy and excited to be here today.
Okay, so let's first start with those who don't know you already. What has your career been up to now, and where's your interest in R coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get started, I would want to say that today the views and opinions that I will be expressing are my own and that I will not be speaking on behalf of AstraZeneca. So, but now this being said, my name is Guillaume, and I work as a statistical science director at AstraZeneca in Sweden. And I graduated from ENSAI, which is the French National School of Statistics, 12 years ago. And since the beginning of my career, I've had the chance to work in a diverse set of settings. I started my career in academia at the University of California, San Francisco. And after a couple of years, my wife and I decided that we wanted to relocate to Europe to be closer to family. And for me, relocating to Europe was synonymous of making that transition from academia to the pharma industry. And I have been in the industry since 2015. And what has been very interesting since 2015 is that I have had the chance to work in companies of different sizes, going from a biotech all the way to a big pharma, because I work for AstraZeneca. Now, you're asking, where does your interest in art lies? And reflecting on my art journey, I can still remember having a chat with a very good friend of mine back when we were studying, and he was such an advocate of art. And I was such an advocate of SAS back then. And we were going in these constant arguments on which tool was basically the best. Well, as I was saying, back then my preference was for SAS, but that was a very long time ago. And more importantly, that was before I went to academia, where basically SAS was a no-go. But things have changed a lot since.
Since then, yeah, definitely things have changed a lot since then. So, in terms of where do you see the overall industry moving in terms of that?
That's a very good question. I think we live in very exciting times because in the past few years, we've seen and we've been able to witness a true paradigm shift. If we step back a tiny bit, not long ago, as a statistician, you kind of had to choose your camp. Either you were a SAS user or you were an R user, but you could not really be both. But things are different today, I think. Many industries many companies and our industry in general are evolving towards a multilingual programming strategy. And I'm a big advocate of using the right tool for the right job. So if, for example, if R is better at doing data visualization, let's use R. If SAS is better at doing a specific kind of statistical technique, let's use SAS. And now, of course, we need to remember that this comes with some implications if you want, to use, for example, both languages in a submission, as some of our peers have done. It comes with some implications because your standard operating procedures have to be open to this. They have to be open to the fact that, okay, it's not just going to be a proprietary language, but maybe it's going to be an open source language. So you have to be open to that kind of things. So that's one aspect, the SOP aspect and the fact of embracing this multilingual programming strategy. Again, if we step back from this, I think this multilingual programming strategy is extremely important to attract talents. Now, let's imagine two companies. One company sticks to a proprietary programming language, and one company basically says, well, you can use the right tool for the right job. Which company do you think a young talent is going to join?
Of course, the second one, because most of the young talents, and I know this is one of the biggest arguments in favor of, the open source languages like R, Python, and the others, is that that's what people are trained across the world in at universities. Yeah, and so I was kind of just graduating before, R came really into being. And so for me, it was all SAS. Yeah. But a couple of years later, I know that all these SAS macros, were also published in R within the university. Yeah. And nowadays, if you look into publications from university professors, it always comes with an R package. Yeah, that is
Absolutely.
kind of the standard way to do it now. And of course, that saves you a lot of training. It makes it much easier for, people to get started, to bring their knowledge, get up to speed, all these kind of things. And yes, I know the SOP thing is definitely a topic. I still remember some SOPs where it was specifically kind of SAS code was in there, or specific references to SAS were in there, and all these kind of different things. So, yeah, for example, please check your SAS log file or something like this for these warnings and whatsoever. Yeah. And you need to have this header in your SAS whatsoever. Yeah. all these kind of different things in terms of SOPs, guidances. Of course, you need to update all of that. Yeah.
And we kind of laugh about it, but it's not that easy. You can't be like, oh, let's use R, and you know, tomorrow you're going to be using R, and you know, it's not a walk in the park. Let's put it that way.
It's definitely not a walk in the park. Even in smaller companies, yeah, it's a big change. And the bigger the company is, the bigger the change. And so driving this change is actually one of the key things we want to talk about this today. And whenever you want to drive change, one aspect is absolutely key. You need to take the people with you. And while doing this, one effective way is to build a community. So the community of our users at AZ, how did that start?
I joined AstraZeneca in October 2020. And this community, the community of our users at AstraZeneca, started in early 2021. And back then, in early 2021, we knew there were many R users at AstraZeneca, but there were three questions we could not answer about that. The first one, we did not know who the R users were. The second one, we did not know where they were in the organization. And the third one, we did not know what they were using R for. So that was the starting point. And to kick it off, we brainstormed with two friends of mine at AstraZeneca, and we jotted down some ideas. We were like, okay, maybe we could write some kind of blog post, or maybe we could have an internal conference, or maybe we could sit with Pride Tidy Tuesday. Tidy Tuesday, which is a data visualization challenge happening outside of AstraZeneca. And Tidy Tuesday is kind of similar to the Wonderful Wednesdays that you've been running as part of the data visa special interest group. So we had all these ideas, and we kicked off the community of our users at AstraZeneca by launching AZ Tidy Tuesday in April 2021.
Awesome. So yeah, that is a great way. Yeah, you have directly kind of a platform, you have some way to exchange. And for all the people who don't know about Tidy Tuesday and Wonderful Wednesday, just a short recap. By the way, you can also go to the Visualization Special Interest Group home to check about this at psiweb.org. The format is very simple. Every second Wednesday of the month, there's a webinar during which a data set and the corresponding data visualizations that were provided by the community is discussed, and all these kind of different visualizations are critiqued, looked at what are good applications, what are bad applications, all these different things. And actually, by far, I think over 90% of the submissions are in R. And then at the end of the webinar, SIG provides a new curated data set that can be worked on up to the next webinar. So, and that kind of ends, gives you a cycle of lots of different webinars. So did you also run that on a monthly basis or even on a weekly basis?
So initially it was on an every other week kind of basis. And then we moved it on a monthly basis. And basically what we were doing as part of this data viz challenge, so it was a similar kind of setting as what you were referring to. What we did is that we sold with pride AZ Tidy Tuesday in the sense that we gave it a twist.
Okay.
So I was the one in charge of it. And each time we were promoting a data set from Tidy Tuesday or like a publicly available data set, I was telling a story around it. And that story was framed around one of the AstraZeneca values or around something happening at AstraZeneca at that time or around something happening in the world at that time. So we stole it with pride, was happening, you know, once every other week or once a month. And what we did, in addition to basically receiving and reviewing, you know, outputs, we also did some code review. So every single entry, we were doing a code review. So not only did we learn a lot, as code reviewers, but obviously, the community learned a lot. Absolutely.
Awesome. I love this twist about the story. Can you give an example of how such a story could look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, one story that I can remember is, there are many stories, that I loved about it, but one that I can remember is it was during Pride Month, AstraZeneca. So I was able to find a data set about LGBTQ plus rights. And basically the, I think, best graph was a map of the world showing where it was the worst to be a member of the LGBTQ plus community compared to other countries. And the story around it was, basically you've got these rights, you've got LGBTQ plus rights, you've got these rights, and we had this data set to support the fact that you are better off in some countries compared to other countries. So that's one example of one story. But there are many stories around it. We touched upon inclusion and diversity. We touched about lifelong learning. We touched about like so many things. We touched about our packages, of course. So we had some visualizations about, the most downloaded packages, to be a bit more geeky
Well, I love it because that way you have something for everybody.
in a way.
And you also, because you use data that affects everybody, and is interesting for everybody. Well, maybe the most downloaded are packages are more people, but all these other things, of course, you get a much bigger interest. And you can share it with internal communications and all these kind of other things. So that is awesome. Really, really nice. By the way, how did you communicate internally?
So we've got an internal social media, and that has been our main mode of communication. Now, we know that not everyone, that social media does not suit to everyone, and that not everyone is very active on the social media. So what we've been doing is that we also have a monthly newsletter, basically summarizing what has been happening in the past month in the community. So even if you are not that active on the social media, which remains our main mode of communication, in that newsletter, you've got hyperlinks to the initiatives of the past month, so you can catch up. And it's also a heads up on what's going to be happening next month.
Awesome.
So that was, not long ago, that was R in Pharma a couple of weeks ago. So in the last newsletter, we did a heads up about it. By the way, this is happening next month. There's a bunch of topics that are probably of interest to some of us. So, keep an eye out.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I always recommend in doing kind of change management. Use all the different communication methods that you have. Don't just rely on one because everybody has a different way of communicating. Internal social media, internal blog posts, whatever, Teams, email, whatever you're using, all these kind of different platforms you can use. Also, presenting it at all kind of different town halls, leadership meetings, these kind of interactions are really, really helpful. And of course, the bigger your community, and if you provide them, easy to use tools to speak about it, to introduce it, all these kind of different things, it makes it easy to spread the word and get more and more people connected. One important thing I think is for those that are in the inner community, so the inner circle, these need to have very, very close connection and collaboration.
I absolutely agree. What I was going to say as well is, in a lot of these things, and I think it's true for a lot of things that we do, it's about doing things well and it's about talking about them.
Yes.
And then, because you can work as hard as you want, if you keep it to yourself, no one will ever know.
I actually even say it doesn't really have an impact. So one of the critical things you need to understand in a bigger organization is that you need to make the organization aware of all these kind of different things. Otherwise, people will not be able to leverage it, to utilize it. So, of course, it might sound, like you're selling something, and maybe you don't love it, of bragging or selling some things. I think this is a mindset topic. If you don't talk about this, it's a disservice to the organization. You're basically keeping it to yourself. That is selfish. Talking about it and helping others, that is not selfish. So it's I really need to put it around,
Absolutely.
upside down. So talk about all these kind of different things and how they help others. It, not about how great you are. Talk about how it helps others, and that will make a huge difference.
Absolutely. It's about sharing lessons learned, sharing knowledge and helping others. Absolutely.
So in terms of, so you started with this tidy day at AZ, and your initial goals were to kind of find the people, connect the people, know what they are doing about. How did these goals change over time? What are kind of the current goals that you have for your community?
I think the goal remains the same in the sense that the goal of the community is to federate the community of our users at AstraZeneca. And it has been the same for the past 3 years, basically. And we put it in place to get a better sense of collaborators using Arm across our organization. And what was very interesting is that it allowed us to discover that there are not just the usual suspects using Arm. It is not just the statisticians, or not just the programmers, or not just the data scientists, but it's basically all the collaborators with a quantitative mindset. And for example, it can be medical doctors, it can be clinicians, it can be managers, it can be HR collaborators, it can be so many functions. And that's where the strength of R lies. Because R being open source, but we're talking about R, but it could be any kind of open source language. Being open source, if you want to play with it, you can play with it. And there is so much out there, basically, to learn how to use R that you don't need any specific kind of training. You can train yourself. So the goal remains the same. And following this goal, it's been very interesting to be like, okay, that's not just the usual suspects, but it's a lot of people across any kind of organization. And I think that's why this community resonates in so many people. And that's why, it grew so much in the past 3 years, basically.
That is a really good point. A couple of things. You mentioned that, R is helps everybody that works with data. And of course, there's not just clinical and medical data. There's HR data, there's finance data, there's procurement data, there is data about sales, about marketing, pharmacotherapy, and the data that we all love. Resource planning and headcounts and these kind of different things. When I was doing data visualization training within one of my recent companies, exactly stepped into these same areas. And it was a great way to showcase what you can do as a statistician, what you can do as a statistical organization, because you help others understand data, communicate data, analyze data, understand variability, all these kind of different statistical things. And data visualization, as you also used it with Tidy Tuesday, is absolutely amazing because it is what everybody is using. No, not everybody is using that, no, propensity scores and estimands and randomization and all these other things. Data visualization, everybody is using.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, when we go see our stakeholders to get funding for a clinical trial or for a program, what is it that we're doing? We are telling a story.
Well, if we are good, yes, then we are telling.
The question is like, do they buy it or not? And one thing that can help buy it is good data visualization. And we've all seen, one way of presenting data or another of presenting data. And of course, the better one is going to be more appealing and you're going to understand it better. And it's likely you are going to buy it more, if it looks nicer than if you have a really hard time, understanding what's going on.
We just talked about Tidy, your newsletter. Were there any other activities that you did internally to improve the connection within your community and also to grow it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had, so in the past 3 years, so I was saying at the beginning, we jotted down some ideas, we investigated some, and then in the end, we decided to retire some of them. For example, AZ Tidy Tuesday, we decided to retire it at the end of 2022 for various kinds of reasons. One was the fact that interest was kind of fading away, and the other one being that it was quite time consuming. Because we were doing one code review for every single entry. Now, let's imagine you've got just five entries, even just five entries. To do a proper code review, you can't really spend less than 1 hour. So, five times one is 5 hours. It's quite a decent, amount of time that you need to carve out of your time. So, we've had initiatives come and go. And as of today, we've got six initiatives going on a monthly basis. And you were talking about blog posts. That's one thing that we have. So we have a monthly blog post about a specific R package. We've got a lunch and learn, keeping in mind that people tend to be busy. So we're like, okay, let's have a 30-minute format, 20-minute presentation, 10-minute Q&A. For inclusion and diversity, we're like, okay, we should alternate between Europe time zone and US time zone. So every other month it happens at Europe lunchtime, European lunchtime, and every other month at American lunchtime. We have a hot desk where people can ask questions. And that can be anything. It can be, tricky ways of using R, it can be, ways of using R in our organization. That's probably the thing that as a community we can be the most proud of, in the sense that since the beginning of the year, we've seen it evolve so much. We launched a proof of concept of this last year, and we launched it as a face-to-face kind of thing in our Gothenburg facilities. And there were not that many people showing up. I was doing it with a friend of mine, and every month we said, okay, we're going to be there, for 2 hours. If you've got any questions, stop by it, and we'll be happy to help. There were not that many people that showed up, so we're like, okay, we still think there is some value in it, but let's revisit it. So instead, what we've done is instead of having a face-to-face kind of thing where you can show up and you can ask questions, we have a Teams channel. And you can ask questions. So at the moment, we have about 1,000 collaborators in this Teams channel. And at the beginning, it was only the steering committee that was, putting things there and answering questions. But what I find very interesting is that not long ago, things changed and people now dare asking questions in this channel. And it's not just the steering committee members that answer these questions, but it's like anyone in the community. And we were talking about, being change agents and, active change. I think this very much relates to being okay with being vulnerable. Being okay with like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna say in front of 1,000 people that I have no clue in how to do this, right?
Yes.
And that's why I think that's one of the things we can be the most proud of in this community, because you can talk about numbers, you can talk about many things, but kind of building this psychologically safe space where you say, you know what, it is impossible to know everything. It applies to art, but it applies in our field. You know, we talked in the past of, you know, how vast our field is. And it's okay. You can ask questions. You know, it's okay to be vulnerable. So we've got this, and in addition to this, we've got a few other initiatives. So we've got the newsletter that I was talking about. We have a workshop in collaboration with POSIT, which is formerly known as Art Studio. And last but not least, the new kid on the block is AZ Art Ladies.
Okay.
So you might have heard of Art Ladies. So Art Ladies is a nonprofit aiming at promoting the use of art and at promoting STEM within women. And what is very interesting with AZ Art Ladies is that it is the very first Art Ladies happening within an organization.
Okay.
Because you've got Art Ladies happening all over the world. So you've got one in Paris, you've got one in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, you've got some all over the world, but it's like region dependent, not company specific. And I find it interesting because the moment you say, you know, we've got an AZ Art Ladies, then it's like, okay, you know, AstraZeneca is investing time not only in art, that's one thing, but AstraZeneca is investing time in promoting the use of art within women. And you know, that's why I think it's such a great initiative.
Awesome. This is really cool. In terms of the general internal perception about this community, can you tell us a little bit about this, especially also from in the organization?
So I think the internal perception is terrific, really. And internally as well as externally, this community is seen as one success story in how one can build a community. Again, it's not about the numbers, but to give you a sense of the scale of what we're talking about, since early 2021, this community grew from 200 collaborators to 1,600 collaborators.
Wow, amazing.
You know, that's an eightfold increase in 2 years. You know, it is surreal. So, but again, you know, I don't think, you know, talking about numbers is like, you know, should be the right metric. To give you a sense of the internal perception, at AstraZeneca, we've got something called the Research and Development Awards. It happens once a year, and it is here to recognize some of the great work done internally. So it can be science related, or it can be, you know, community related, or whatever, basically. And in 2022, the community of our users at AstraZeneca was a finalist in these R&D awards. So I think, you know, that's a definite testimony of the way this community is viewed internally. So that's how it is viewed. Now, you know, to be completely honest, there is how a community is perceived, and then there is, okay, can you find metrics of success of a
Yeah.
community? And this is much harder.
Okay. Tell me more about that.
So one easy metric could obviously, you know, could be a number game. You know, you could be saying, well, you know, it's just, you know, the number of members in your community. But to be honest, you might have understood it already, but to be honest, that's not really a metric that I like.
No, because you will always have how many are really active? Yeah. This is
Absolutely.
yeah. And you'll always have this exponential distribution in there.
Absolutely. And the reason I don't like this metric either is because I like to have a metric that one can have a direct influence on. You can have as hard as you want, you know, community members can come and go. So you can't really measure the success of your community this way. So instead, one metric that I like, one metric of success that I like is the number of ongoing initiatives, you know, what I was talking about, and the six initiatives that we have at the moment, because with this metric, you can have a direct impact. The steering committee members, you've got an idea, you implement it, it works, it works, it fails, it fails, that's fine, but you can have a direct impact.
These are very often called lead measures. Yeah. Things that you can directly have an impact on and that you know will drive outcome later on. Exactly. Yeah.
And so that's a metric that I like. Another tangible metric to give you an example. A couple of months ago, my manager's manager reached out to me and a collaborator at AstraZeneca, and he sent us an email asking us, okay, have you ever used the R-PACT package? And I had never used it. The person CC'd had never used it either. But I knew I could leverage the community. And I was talking about the help desk, which is a Teams chat. So I put a message in the help desk. And I asked, okay, have you ever used the RPAC package, and putting a link to it so that people could have a look at it, if they were interested. And I was tapping onto 1,000 collaborators, right? Within 40 minutes, we had identified a subject matter expert.
Awesome. Yeah.
And it's not about the number of minutes, but if you think about it, how long it would have taken us to identify that person.
Yep.
Sending one email after another email after another email. It probably would have taken us days, right?
And especially kind of if these people are not sitting in the organizations that you expect them to sit in, yeah. That is one thing. The other thing is, of course, you would probably spam a lot of people that are not using R at all. Yeah. And so it's a very, very specific search. Awesome. Yeah. I think, but by the way, metrics are one thing. Having these success stories is incredible in terms of understanding the impact and also selling the impact of the community. I think if you ever drive change, also have, these success stories in there.
I completely agree. And I can still remember going back to the DataViz challenge. It was in the early days, it was like 2021. And 2021 was pandemic time. And I remember someone who became to be a very good friend of mine in the organization. I remember that person telling me, well, you know what? This data visualization challenge did not just help me to get better at R, but it helped me also go through the pandemic. So not willing to make it bigger than what it is, but this was a challenge outside of that day-to-day work, a challenge happening every other week or happening once a month, kind of a breath of fresh air. So I agree, these small success stories, and when people tell you, well, after this R-Lazy event, I was able to connect with X because we happened to meet there, and it happened that we have a common interest in that specific topic, or that person knows, how to do some shiny apps or whatever. I agree with you. And it's probably more important than the metric. You need metrics because you need to be like, okay, you're investing time in it, so is it valuable? So you need this. At the same time, I completely agree with you. You need to have these softer aspects in a way.
If you would go back in time and start it all over again, what would you do differently?
That's a very good question. I think the first thing I would tell myself is it takes a lot of time. There's no shortcut. There's no magic. It takes a lot of time. But if I was to tell myself two things, first, I would tell myself, put a structure in place as soon as possible. And
What do you mean by structure?
what I mean by structure is, so in 2021, it was kind of self-led. So it was a few of us, it was kind of self-led, meaning that it was kind of hard to know, okay, who has ownership. And it's not about getting ownership, but like who should drive it? If it's not done, who should push things forward? So that was 2021, and since beginning of 2022, I've decided to take the lead of this community. And by taking the lead of this community, I've decided to have a lead the six initiatives that we were talking about. There's actually one lead for each of these initiatives. So there's ownership of the steering committee, which is, on me, but ownership of each initiative and leadership of each initiative, it is on these other leaders. So that's what I mean by putting a structure in place. If you want to, we say, divide to conquer or something like this. If you want to be able to be an active change agent and to drive all these initiatives, you need to delegate. You need to have these leaders and to delegate, ownership and leadership of these initiatives, and they drive it the way they want to drive it. So, put a structure in place, and closely related to this, surround yourself with passionate people.
Yes. Yeah. Completely agree.
And in the past 2 years, I've been fortunate, honestly, while building this community, to be surrounded by extremely passionate, creative, and talented people. And if you surround yourself with passionate people, you can basically move mountains. So that's the first thing, put that structure in place, surround yourself with passionate people. And the second thing I would not tell myself, but rather ask myself, is this new idea, is this new initiative, is it a sustainable one? Can you scale it up? Can you sustain it? We're not talking about, doing a one-shot kind of thing. Because, when we talk about communities, we tend to think, oh, it's a virtual community, it's completely different from a real life community. But in reality, it's the exact same thing. So,
Exactly.
we're going to be okay. You know what? On Monday evening, I'm going to go to my Swedish language cafe. On Tuesday evening, I'm going to go climbing. On Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. It's the exact same thing in virtual communities. So the moment you bring something to the community, you need to think, okay, can I scale it up? Can I sustain it? Not over 2 weeks, over a month, but can I sustain it over a year? Is it
And
doable?
longer.
Exactly. Over a year and longer, as you have been doing, with the Effective Statistician podcast, right?
Exactly.
I think this is extremely important, and that's why in the end we decided to retire AZ Tidy Tuesday.
You need to absolutely find ways to scale things. And there's probably yet another complete podcast episode on how to scale things. Last question I have is, what does it mean to you personally?
It means a lot, and it helped me so much. And it helped me on so many aspects, and I want to mention a few of them. The first one is on the aspect of leadership. In the past 2 years, I have led a cross-functional team of 15 collaborators. And leading cross-functionally teaches you so much on leadership.
Yes, that is true leadership.
And it teaches you so much. Because if you want to be able to drive change via a cross-functional team, you need to inspire people.
Yes, you can't tell people because they don't report to you.
Exactly. And then, if you manage to do, if you manage people to follow you and to follow, your leadership and your ideas, the day you will become a managing leader will be so much easier. Because you won't rely on the fact, oh, I tell you to do this. You rely on the leadership and inspiring people and ideas.
Yes, this is so true. This is what I'm talking about in the leadership course that we have from the Effective Statistician all the time. Leadership is inspiring others to act on your ideas. And I really love this overall story about the R at AstraZeneca community, because this is an absolutely great example of an amazing success story that was initiated but just some people getting together, having an idea, and moving it forward. This was not decided at a big governance meeting with lots of VPs in there, where they said, we will invest 10 or 50 million over the next years, and we put a governance body in place, and we, buy in external consultants and all these other things. Yeah. No, it was done by, people like you and me, completely kind of usual workers. Yeah. No specific title. Yeah. The key thing is you were passionate about it. You surrounded yourself with other passionate people, and you gave people a structure, a platform, like the Tidy Tuesday, like these other initiatives, in which they can perform, in which they can grow, in which they can connect. This is what great leaders do. They make it easy for others to achieve something.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex. And then I can completely relate to what you said. It's very much a it was very much a bottom-up kind of initiative. It was an idea started from nothing, just a small meeting, in early 2021, and it grew a lot. So it helped me a ton on leadership. The second thing, it helped me a lot on the communication aspect. Because in the past 2 years, I have been the face of this community. I have been able to tell the story of this community in various forums, be it internally, be it externally, in different formats. So it was oral presentations, it was panel discussions, it was blog posts, a podcast like we're doing today.
Yeah.
And we say, practice makes perfect. You have to rub shoulders if you want to improve your communication skills. Go do it. At first it's gonna be itchy. At first it's gonna be hard, but then it's gonna become easier and easier over time.
Yep. There's one other benefit, and you talked about this in our pre-meeting. It also helped you with your overall career. Yeah. Because you're now not just yet another statistician at AZ. You're the face of this big community. And of course, that helps quite a lot when it's about new opportunities, new stuff. Yeah. People higher up will see you, will kind of think about you when you have these opportunities. So that's for sure another
Yeah,
benefit.
I absolutely agree. And that's the third thing I wanted to mention is like the networking aspect. And because at the end of the day, when we talk about building a community, we talk about building a network of collaborators. And the connections that I have been able to make, like internally and externally, are just surreal. And honestly, I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
And so to give you an idea, internally, so we've got something at AstraZeneca. We've got a shadowing initiative, which basically allows one to shadow someone within that function or in another function. And a couple of months ago, I was shadowing the VP of biometrics in oncology at AstraZeneca. It was the very first meeting. We were just doing a round of introduction. It was my turn to introduce myself. I had just unmuted myself, and then this VP says, "Oh, hold on a second. You're the R guy, right?" I had never interacted with that person. I had never worked with that person. But I guess, that's what happens when you are the face of such a big community. We are talking about more than 1,600 members as of today. So when you send an email to the community, you send it to 1,600 members. Not every single of the 1,600 are going to be opening, the email, that's for sure. But still, it's a very bright reach. So that's internally. And now externally, again, that's surreal, and I still need to pitch myself to realize it. But like the community of our users recently hosted Halle Weekend.
This is so cool. I saw that on LinkedIn when you announced it. I said, wow. For all the listeners who haven't, I can't believe that there are people that don't know about Hadley Wickham, but can you shortly talk about who he is?
Yeah, absolutely. So Halle Wickham is one of the founding figures of modern R programming language. He's behind the tidyverse, he's behind ggplot, he's behind like so many books. One of the most influential ones is probably R for Data Science. So he's a very big name in the field, and in R and in the field in general, if not the biggest name. And we hosted him, so we had a private talk by Halle Weekend to our community members. Now, had you told me 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you're going to be hosting Halle Weekend in 2 years or 3 years' time, I would have said, I mean, come on, you must be kidding me.
Yeah, I replied to your LinkedIn post that at some point others will talk in the same way about you.
Thank you, Alex.
Absolutely. You can meet outstanding people. Yeah. And I have experienced exactly the same. Yeah. I've met Alberto Cairo. Yeah. I've met on this podcast, just scroll through it, how many people I've been meeting. Yeah. If you would have told me, oh yeah, in a couple of years you will all have a one-to-one with these for an hour, yeah, and you become really good connected, I would say, come on. Yeah. But if you become the face of such a change initiatives, really amazing things happen internally and externally. Absolutely agree. I think that is one thing that we haven't talked so much about. These change initiatives do not just live within your company. They have a very, very big area also outside of the companies. And yeah, depending on how you exactly do it, the outside company activities can help you with your internal credibility also quite a lot.
Absolutely. I can totally relate to it. You were talking about the biomarkers, European Special Interest Group. It's a cross-industry kind of initiative, but it's a win-win. I work for AstraZeneca. So obviously I represent AstraZeneca in this special interest group that I co-lead with Nicole from Boehringer. And it's a win-win in the sense that I co-lead this. So we drive change externally. And then at the same time, internally, I can leverage all these connections from across the industry. Because when we talk about the special interest group, the biomarker special interest group, we're talking about like 45 people from across the industry. We've got people from all over. And I completely relate to the fact that it helps you so much. And sometimes we tend to think of this as, oh, but I have so much on my plate, I don't have time. I mean, let me be honest, there will never ever be enough time. It's about saying yes to things, and then you accommodate and you move things up and down the list of priorities. But like, if we go back to the community of our users, of course it has been a lot of work. I'm not gonna lie. It has been a huge amount of work, but what I got out of it goes way beyond any expectations. It's surreal.
Awesome. That is a perfect finish for this episode where we talked about, how a small, idea between three people grew into something absolutely major and outstanding within actually just some years. And so thanks so much for sharing your stories on all these kind of different things with the listeners. For everybody who is really keen to engage with Guillaume, just, I'll put a link to his LinkedIn profile in it. We'll also put a link to the biomarker SIG in it, which we talked about. And so have a look into these. We'll also probably put a link into it in terms of the Wonderful Wednesdays, as we talked about this quite a lot, and any other interesting things that Guillaume will share with me later on.
Yeah.
So thanks so much. And
yeah,
all the
you.
Best for the future. I'm pretty sure this will not be the last time that we have been here together on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. It was great to chat again. And yeah, as you said, it's always a great pleasure. I'm always happy to help, always happy to share lessons learned. So feel free to reach out to me. You know where to find me. You can find me on LinkedIn. So yeah, please feel free to reach out if you want.
This was an absolutely amazing episode, and it talks about driving change. It talks about you being a leader, and if you want to be really a change agent, if you want to become a leader, connect with me on LinkedIn, write me an email and set up a meeting with me, and then we can talk about what we can do together to achieve this. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped us the show in the background. And thank you for listening. So there's probably not so many other episodes but like this where it's really about reach your potential, lead great science and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.